Hello, listeners. This is John Wordsworth, and you're listening to the second episode of The Divide, a podcast about all things geeky. So I'm here with Chris and Ben, both from the slightly warmer lands of the UK compared to Sweden. And with the recent launch of the iPad Pro, we're going to talk a bit about tablets and their future alongside laptops. But first, let's just say hello. So, Ben, how's it going over there in the UK?
Yeah, it's good. It's cold, it's grey, so it's perfect for me because I hate any kind of weather that is not that.
Curse the sun.
Well, that's a really good way to entice new listeners to the show, isn't it? I hate everything. Listen to my podcast.
I don't hate everything. I hate most things, and I hate the weather the most. It's funny because, like, quite often when clients like phone me, I'm like, "Oh, hey Ben, how's it going?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's good." They're like, "Oh, the weather's so nice here in San Francisco. It's so hot. It's so great. I'm gonna catch some rays on the beach later. How's it over there in the UK?" And I'm like, "It's hot and sunny here. It's yeah." And they're like, "Oh, that must be great." I'm like, "No, no, it's horrible. I have blackout curtains, and I'm still hot. The air conditioning on. I'm gonna go into the basement later.
So you can come over and join me in Sweden. You'd like it here.
I like Sweden."
And how about you, Chris? How's everything going?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's raining down here in Devon, which is a fairly standard Devon day.
God bless.
Yeah, it's cold and it's grey and it's raining. But actually, something that you probably don't experience in the North Pole, where you are, is that it's gone from being really pleasant T-shirt weather this at the start of the week to suddenly it like dropped about 10 degrees and it's just very, very unpleasantly cold all of a sudden.
Nice. Well, we have this horrible thing at the beginning of November when the clocks change.
They do that all over the world.
No way. Yeah. But it makes it sort of, it goes from, you leave work and it's just the light, to it gets dark at 4:15 in the afternoon now and it's just getting earlier and earlier. You're like, oh no, the darkness is here.
And you get like days where you only get like 4 hours of daylight over there.
We're in the south, so Stockholm's quite far south. But I have a couple of friends who live up in the north of Sweden, like 800 miles further north than Stockholm.
Right.
And they have basically a month or two of one end of the year where it doesn't really get light. And then the other end of the year where it doesn't really get dark. Like they'll be up at 3 a.m. doing, yeah, cleaning the car or something because there's no real sense of time of day because the sun's up. So
sounds pretty horrible. Ben, I think you'd probably like that, wouldn't you?
I would love it.
You'd love the bit. Yeah.
Like, I like it when it's, I mean, this isn't the weather podcast, but who cares? I like it when it's cold outside and you can go outside for a bit and be like, oh, it's cold and wet out here. It's horrible. But then you see your house and you're like, oh yeah, it's light, it's going to be nice and warm in there, I can have a nice cup of tea and everything will be better. And then you can look outside and see people in the rain or being blown around with umbrellas and it's hilarious and I love it.
You're just like sitting there watching other people misfortune.
Yeah, that's pretty much my life. I like watching others misfortune.
Cool. So let's start off with a bit of a follow-up from the last show, and there's a couple of points that we can jump back to when we talked about our favorite games. And Portal 2 Steam Workshop is...
Yeah, so I loaded up Portal 2 after our conversation in the last show. Really, because I wanted to see if what I'd said was true, because I said that there was an update that added support for the Steam controller, and then I thought, did I make that up or was that true? And I loaded it up, and I was like, oh yeah, that is. And then I scrolled down a little bit, and there was this thing called the Workshop, and I was like, what's this? And then I realized that they've added like this whole thing where people can create their own Portal test chambers using the stuff that Steam give them, and there's like loads of downloadable really, really awesome extra test chambers, and I downloaded one which is called 12 Angry Tests Part 1. And it's epic. You start off in like a little room, like you always do, and you look out, and there's like a big beach. And you go out a side door, and then when you go round, you realise you're just in a big warehouse, and there's like little fake boards showing like a picture of a beach that you were looking at. But you go back, when you go into the room, it's like a proper skybox, and then when you come out, they must like remove the skybox, and then there's just these little crappy boards. But it's really good, really funny. So yeah, that was epic. So if you like Portal 2 and you're, you know, thinking Portal 3 is never going to come because Steam are so slow at everything, then go and check out the workshop and you can just download hundreds and hundreds of extra test chambers. I'm sure some of them are terrible. I've not really played with it properly. But the ones that I've seen so far have been awesome. Really good.
Sounds cool. Totally awesome. I remember when I don't know if they're really modding tools, but like you say, the test chamber creation tools came out and playing with them a little bit. And it wasn't too hard to make something pretty cool. And now I imagine that there's probably, like you say, there's probably 10,000 awful ones and maybe 100 good ones, but that's still 100 good ones. So, you know.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I used to play a lot of Counter-Strike back in the day, and I used to make a few maps and stuff for that. And we had one in our boarding house that I'd made, like a recreation of it, so we could play 36-player Counter-Strike in the place we were playing it. And we did hostage rescue where we'd steal the housemaster's kids. It was a bit weird. And I had another one, which I downloaded, where it just replaced the hostages with Terrence and Philip.
Right.
So every time he'd go and rescue a hostage, like in Italy, and he'd be like, "We got the hostages." And they'd be like, "Hey, buddy!" Chase after you, flying behind you. Oh, it's great.
Sweet. That sounds awesome. Yeah, so Portal 2, Steam Workshop, seems like it's worth checking out again.
Just as a little side note to that, I just popped onto Steam, and Portal 2 is only like £3 at the moment. So, well, no, actually, I might have to edit that out because I'm sure by the time this goes live, I'm sure it'll be back up to full price. But
full price.
A little disclaimer: if you log on to Steam right now, Portal may or may not be.
It's cheap all the time. I mean,
yeah. So it's either going to be cheap or even more cheap.
It's like if you're a bit of a tight ass, you can definitely get it for £2 or £3. Just wait for the end of the month. There's usually a sale on the Portal stuff. So.
But as we discussed last week, if it was £60, it would be worth it.
It was an awesome game.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So if you missed that conversation, of course, then you can always go back and download our first episode on iTunes, which is probably the second thing I would recommend doing after you subscribe to our podcast.
Oh, yeah. And the third thing is playing Portal 2 again, because we're better than Portal 2. So,
yeah. Okay, good. I was trying to work that out in my head. It's like, is he saying that you should play Portal instead of listen to our podcast?
The Divide, home of the logic puzzle.
Yeah.
Challenging you every day. So up next, we've got the Apple TV, and that has evolved a little bit since we talked about it on our last show. Ben?
On the last show, I said, we'd only had the Apple TV for, I think, a day when we recorded it last time. And one of the things was that app discoverability was terrible because you literally had the featured screen from Apple, you had search, and you had that was it. And then later in the day, they added purchases so you could see anything you'd already previously bought, including like iPad and iPhone games that were also on the Apple TV. And now they have charts with the top grossing and top free and top paid. And they have categories. So you can go, ooh, shopping. so that's slightly good. So literally, probably the day after we said that there's terrible discoverability, they've improved it, so it's now only slightly terrible discoverability.
Cool. They're obviously listening to The Divide and going, that is a very important point. We'll fix that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they obviously downloaded our first episode and then sent someone back in time to fix it, because we haven't actually, at the time of recording this, we haven't published that first episode yet. But
if anyone has a time machine, it's going to be Johnny Ive. And rather than go back to key points in history, he'll be going to the early recordings of his favourite podcasts.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And making them thinner.
Yeah.
But I'm actually interesting you mentioned that. Obviously, I don't have a new Apple TV, so I can't really comment on this. But the discoverability, isn't that a bit of an issue across all of Apple's various app stores? Like, it's really difficult to actually find something. You can't just go on a browse. You can only find the stuff that they want you to see. Is that right?
It isn't easy, is it? I mean,
no.
I guess what they've done to try and resolve it is just have tons and tons of categories, right? So you can see the top 100 of about 30 categories. Yeah. I guess that's their solution, which does give you a fairly wide spread of apps. But you're right, it is quite hard to kind of unless you know the name of an app, heard it from a friend, maybe seen it on a website or heard about it on a podcast, then you don't really know what to search for. So
no.
And the number of things I like, it really, really irritates me. The number of things that get featured by Apple that are either things that have been featured previously, so just showing you again, or they double them up, like they have them in the banner at the top and then they have them in the first spot underneath the banner, so it's taking up even more space. Or things like, I was looking at the iPad Pro games, or games optimized for iPad Pro, and one of them is Tiny Wings HD, which was updated last October 2014. And it's like, this has not been optimized for the larger screen. It's just going to be the original one blown up because they didn't have the tools necessary to do that. So it's not optimized for iPad Pro, is it, Apple? You liars. whereas there are probably good games out there that should get featured that aren't, because, you know, they just aren't.
But I guess it's tough from their perspective as well. I mean, when you've got however many apps now, you probably know this, Ben, like half a million, maybe many, many millions, I'm not sure.
There's five apps for every child.
In China.
So there's a bucket ton of apps, and I guess it's hard for them as well. But that's good news about the Apple TV and the charts coming in, because at least there's a slight more usability there. So
yeah, it's better than nothing, because also you don't want to be searching or browsing, because you couldn't even browse. It's just look at the top 50 apps out of what are probably 3,000-4,000 at the moment.
I'm going to share just one little piece of excitement before we move on to the main meat of the show. And that is something awesome that's happened since the last show, and it's Fallout 4. Ha ha, yeah.
Oh, don't get me started.
In a good way or a bad way, Ben?
This is why I spent 7 hours yesterday trying to install Windows. Because I foolishly put Fallout 4, I've never played a Fallout game, I put it on my Christmas list for Xbox One. And now everyone's playing it, and I'm like, well, I want to play it. But now people have started buying stuff off my list, so I don't know if people have bought it, so I can't buy it. So I was like, And then I thought, I've got to get a gaming PC at some point, because I want to play it at like higher than 1080p. And then I realized, I have a 5K iMac. I can put Windows on this. And then I could just get a pirated copy of Fallout 4 and play that and see if I like it.
Not a pirated copy, Ben.
Yeah, a pirated copy.
A demo, an extended demo.
No, a pirated one. and then, because presumably I would then get on the Xbox One later, but then I could at least see what everyone's talking about, and I could look at it and go, yeah, this looks good. But I couldn't, because Boot Camp hates me, and I hate Windows, and basically nothing would work. So I haven't been able to try it. And I went to bed last night really annoyed, because I was like, I don't even want to play Fallout 4. I just want the satisfaction of the option of being able to have installed it and be able to play the first 5 minutes and go, yeah, that looks good.
I'm not going to turn this into a Fallout 4 review, because, you know, that's not what we're here for. But I'm going to very quickly say the first hour and a half is awesome. Like, they've really tightened it up from the earlier games. And all the extra stuff, it's basically the old Fallout games, just more and better. So it doesn't look like amazing, like a shiny Battlefront type game, but it is. It's all about the quantity of stuff. Like, you look across the horizon and there's like hundreds of trees and bits of rubble and old buildings and stuff. It's like, yeah, that's all stuff I can explore. So it's pretty awesome and I'm really enjoying it. But again, I don't want to turn into a Fallout 4 review, but go and buy it.
Can you look out from the window of a building and see people being blown about by the rain with their umbrellas turning inside out? Because if you could, I think that Ben would really enjoy that game.
Well, you can mod this game, so maybe I will make a specific mod for you, Benjamin.
Yeah, the people caught in bad weather mod.
Grumpy old man mod.
Yeah. Well, I'm not quite as at the forefront of technology as my co-host here. So I've been playing Fallout New Vegas on my Xbox 360 recently.
On my Commodore 64.
Yeah. I have nothing that will play Fallout 4, so I've just been reliving the good old days. But I really love Fallout, and I don't want to turn this into an extended conversation, because we're actually here to talk about tablets. But something that I find quite interesting, it'd be good if Ben does get to play it, actually, because what I'd quite like to have at a later date is a conversation about like the difference between Fallout and Elder Scrolls, because they're both made by the same publishers, and I really don't get on with the Elder Scrolls games at all, but I love Fallout so much. So I thought that might be an interesting discussion.
Sounds good. This could be a good segue into our topic for the day.
Yeah.
Because, John, you've been experimenting with the Pip-Boy app, haven't you?
Yeah, certainly have. So the last cool feature of Fallout 4, which will segue nicely into the main topic, is that you can load up the Pip-Boy app on your phone, iPad, probably Android, crap too. But and then you can control... So in the game, you find the Pip-Boy, which is like a little computer which sticks to your arm, and it does everything like the inventory management. You can look around the map and fast travel, and you can, you know, see your experience. You can even use stim packs and stuff, but you can do all of that from your tablet or your phone, which is pretty cool because obviously it fits in with the theme really well. I've got my iPad. When I play Fallout 4 now, my iPad just sits down to the bottom left of my keyboard. So instead of pushing the button in-game to look at my Pip-Boy, I can just look down in real life, which obviously has that nice... It emulates what you're doing in the game really well. But it's also kind of cool because you've still got the game up and running. So you can just sort of look around the map, fast travel from your iPad, watch it happen in the game. So yeah, that is a pretty awesome feature. And I wonder if it works on the iPad Pro. Of course it does, but...
It does, because yeah. I downloaded it while I was feeling cocky while I was installing Windows. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get me some Fallout on this. It's not iPad Pro optimized, but it works. Cool. And it has a demo mode, so I could see how it looks, but I couldn't connect it to anything, sadly.
But that brings us nicely into the main meat of the show, which is the discussion about the way tablets are going and maybe whether one day there'll be a lot smaller need for laptops, and we'll all just be walking around with our tablets that do everything that we do with our laptops today. So I guess this is mostly brought about by the release of the iPad Pro, which, with the little keyboard case and the pencil, is, I guess, Apple's take on what the Surface Pro was going for, which is bridging this gap between the two technologies. So we're going to kick off and discuss what devices we currently use. Now, I'm going to ask you to keep this short, Ben, because I suspect you can probably list every iPad that's been released.
Yeah, but just go to the Apple Store website.
Maybe we'll kick off with you, Chris. What devices are you currently using?
So I have a Mac Mini, the 2012 Mac Mini, upstairs in my home office, which is, that was my first Mac, and I bought that when my PC just died and I couldn't be bothered to rebuild it, so I thought I'd just get a computer that worked. So I had my Mac Mini, and that was my primary machine for probably 2 years, and then luckily last year I had the opportunity to get a MacBook Air, so I also have a I think it's an early 2014 MacBook Air or a late 2014 MacBook Air. Early 2014 MacBook Air. So I've got that, which is I has probably become my primary computer because it is so incredibly portable and gloriously lightweight and thin. I mean, it doesn't game at all. The Mac Mini games surprisingly well. Like, you can play StarCraft 2 on it, considering it's only got onboard graphics, and the computer itself is tiny. So it obviously, it can't be that beefy a graphics on the board. But no, it games surprisingly well.
And here comes tablets and phones.
Here comes our co-host Alistair today. Hello, Alistair. Hi. Yeah, are you going to say hello to the people listening?
Yeah.
Okay, good. yes. That was brilliant timing, Alistair, because you want a cuddle. Okay. Daddy is talking about his technology. What do you play with? What do you like to play with? Daddy's iPad, don't you?
Daddy's iPad.
Yeah, so I've got an iPad 3, which I have had for a few years, and I have an iPhone 5, which I've had for... feels like a very long time.
And let's kick this off, Ben. What are you currently using in the way of devices?
Oh, right. Okay. So, computers.
Right. Sit down.
Settle in, boys. I currently have a late 2014 27-inch 5K iMac. I've got one of the 12-inch MacBooks with the USB-C stuff. So they're the only two computers I've got at the moment. And then I've got a... We've got loads of iPads in this house because as I have them for development stuff, they tend not to... I don't tend to sell them. I just tend to keep them afterwards, and then the house is full of iPads. So I think we've got... We had four at the beginning of the week, and now we're back down to three because I sent my sister my iPad 2. So at the moment, we've got an iPad 3, which is... I've got a magnetic case which holds it to the fridge, and then on there I use AirPlay and stuff for the speakers in the kitchen, and we put like recipes and stuff on it, and we have family sharing to put our shopping list and stuff in, so we can constantly add stuff to it when we think of it. And sometimes I pick that up and stick it on the cross trainer in the rare times that I do some exercise to watch Netflix or whatever. And then I've got an iPad Air, just the first one, and now, as of Thursday, an iPad Pro. And then phone-wise, I'm just using an iPhone 6S at the moment. I did have the iPhone 6 Plus, but I went back down to the 6S size, which I'm regretting slightly. I'm thinking I should have gone for the 6S Plus, but anyway. And then an Apple Watch.
Yes.
So really, I have too much. I like when I get a text message, the house, it just comes alive with,
As you point out, though, you are actually a professional Apple developer, so you kind of...
Well, yeah, you say that.
You kind of need to have access to all of the stuff so you can make sure it works, can't you?
Well, you would think so. And I do have, like, I'm looking over at the window and I've got a 5C and a 5S and a 4S lined up at iPhones. And I do occasionally test on them, but there's a simulator for that. So most of the time, it's a good simulator. The reason I have most of this stuff is just because I like buying things.
Yeah.
Especially if they have an Apple logo on.
One of the things that we'll probably talk about in this is the use of tablets. And to be honest, I rarely use iPads. I mean, I've had every single generation that's come out apart from the fourth generation and the iPad Air 2. Mm. And I don't really use them very often. But maybe the Pro will change that. We'll find out.
Have you ever used an iPad Mini?
Oh, yeah, I had an iPad Mini at one point. I got it before the very first one, so it didn't have a Retina display. Mm. So I went from the iPad 3, which did, down to the iPad Mini. And I liked the form factor, but the lack of Retina display just killed me because I had the iPhone probably 4 or 4S at the time.
Yeah,
the iPad 3, and it's just horrible trying to go back down to non-Retina graphics. So then I didn't, when it came to the upgrade time, I went to the iPad Air because that changed the form factor to match the Mini in a sense, in that you had much thinner sides, it was much lighter, and I never went back to the Mini. I think nowadays, I think the Mini's days are probably numbered, realistically, now that you've got like the 6 Plus phone, which is huge. I wonder whether the iPad Mini will hang around that much longer.
They do keep upgrading it, though, don't they? I mean, they recently put all of the technology of the iPad Air 2 into the iPad Mini 4.
Yeah,
I think the primary selling point for the... I think that one of the main selling points of the Mini is like it's a bit of a Kindle-like size device. Mm. So a lot of these people who have like the Paperwhite Kindles and stuff and want something a bit better than that, but the same size to replace their Kindle so they can see things in colour and do a bit more, I think they're like, yeah, I can get that. And it's kind of light and small and they can take it on flights and things. So I can see the niche there for it still, but like you say, it's probably getting smaller. So,
But then it's like a niche market for Apple. I mean, they're probably selling, several billions pounds worth of iPad Minis, and it's probably small fry to them, but it'd be its own business to anyone else, really.
I'm going to quickly whip through my technology, but it's not too dissimilar. Somewhere in the middle of you two guys. So I got my gaming PC, which is obviously for Fallout 4, and anything else, which is shining point is the 1440p display, which is awesome. So glad I bought that. MacBook Pro, which I had primarily for like my work before I started working for Paradox, and obviously I did app development, but it's pretty good, so you can get play game on it as well, because it's the Retina one, Retina MacBook Pro from 2013 with a real graphics card. Then I've got iPad Air 2, which was actually a gift from Paradox, which was pretty awesome.
Are they hiring? Because that sounds like a great place to work.
Okay. I'd like to just point out, for legal reasons, it is not a gift. It is a work machine.
Yeah.
That is actually true.
Off due to tax reasons.
That is actually true. It was given to us for beta testing, like whatever. Even
it's
though
not a gift.
We don't make apps for them, but yeah, it's for beta testing.
Also, but other game developers are available.
And then I've got my iPhone 6 Plus, which has been serving me well for just over a year now, and it's still pretty cool. I got an iPad Pro as well, because I'm still in that I run my own business on the side thing, and I'm still in that, well, it's a new Apple device, I need to have it. Otherwise, I can't make apps for it. Not that I've released an app for like a year and a half. And then I got the Apple Watch. So, yeah, I guess it's only one Apple device less than Ben, so not too bad. But I think now we know that we all have a massive pile of technologies. Please don't rob us.
apart from me. But don't rob me either.
But we should start to think maybe a little bit about what do we do on these devices. And maybe hint as to whether the iPad Pro could be a step in the direction for something that could replace them. So what do you guys do primarily? I guess on your laptops is probably the thing to think about first. And do you think you could do those things on a tablet if it was designed in the right way? Ben?
Well, for me, I mean, this sounds really bad. I don't really use the laptop either. my main work machine is obviously the 5K iMac, which is just lovely. But I have a laptop. I actually bought the MacBook 12-inch because I was going to Sweden to see a certain someone and work on an app. And I realized I didn't have a laptop anymore because I'd sold my Retina MacBook Pro to get the iMac. And then I thought, I'm going over to Sweden for 4 days to work on an app, and I don't have a computer. And I'm not taking an iMac on the plane. So then I bought the 12-inch MacBook because I thought, it'd be nice and small. It's not going to be very, very powerful for the kind of work that I usually do, but it's not going to be my main machine. Like, I used to use a MacBook Pro plugged into an external display, whereas nowadays I'm always on the iMac. So really, the MacBook is purely for doing development work, usually like while I'm in bed. I'll sit and do a bit of coding sometimes. So last Saturday night, I just sat. Last Saturday, I sat in bed until about 3 a.m. just building a little Apple TV app just to sort of see how it works. I just did that on the MacBook, and that was fine. And yesterday, when my iMac had been completely wiped due to the Windows installation, I used the MacBook to encode Thursday's episode of South Park so that I could watch it on my Apple TV. And it took ages because the process is so bad. On my iMac, I can encode a TV show in about 7 minutes. The MacBook took an hour and 20.
Yeah, it's just not built for that continuous work, is it?
It's terrible.
How old is your MacBook, Ben? So what year was it?
It was this year, April.
Really? It's the new MacBook, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, the little tiny 12-inch one.
Which is actually fairly underpowered, isn't it, compared to the MacBook Pros? And isn't it comparable to a MacBook Air?
It's comparable to a MacBook Air from 4 years ago.
Right. So I mean, the thing about it is, like, the processor runs at, I don't know, it's like 1.2 gigahertz or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it can actually turbo boost up to, like, 2.8, which is probably faster than the MacBook Air, but only for 15 seconds until the heat goes up, because there's no fan in it, right? It's silent running.
It's tiny. I mean, it's actually thinner. I'm just comparing it to my iPad Pro. It's thinner than the iPad Pro. It's very, very thin. And it's lovely, but it is not designed to be a MacBook Pro replacement.
I mean, the cool thing is, like, it spikes up. So if you're viewing web pages, like most people will be doing, then in that second that the web page is rendering, you get 2.8 gigahertz, so that is zippy, and then it goes back down to 1.2 gigahertz again, so it's using up hardly any battery, which is great, I think, for just general use and probably even compiling if it's only small iOS apps, because you change your file, you hit compile, and it builds.
Seems
but
to be fine.
If you're doing something big like crunching photos in Photoshop, okay, one or two, it'll be fine. But if you're doing it, you know, like crunching through 100 photos in Photoshop, it's going to take significantly longer because it's going to have to run at that lower clock speed most of the time to keep the power and the heat down. So
the question is, why would I choose this over a MacBook Air, which is more powerful? And the simple reason is that the MacBook has a Retina display, and the MacBook Air doesn't. It's also thinner than an 11-inch MacBook Air, which is ridiculous. It's tiny. But anyway, I rarely use it. I mean, I use it for development work, and that's about it. If I'm going to do anything, like if I'm just reading articles or something in bed or reading a book or whatever, I generally do that on the iPhone and now possibly the iPad. But the MacBook, I mean, I rarely use it. It's really just for when I need to do work in Xcode whilst I'm traveling.
So what are the top three things that you do on your iMac, would you say then? Like, what do you spend most of your time doing on the iMac?
Well, the iMac is also slightly tricky for me because I keep it in my office and I try only to be in there like 9 till 6 in a weekday. So generally work. I play some games on it, not really very many because I do that on the Xbox. But it'll just be generic things, you know, checking email, reading RSS feeds, that kind of stuff. Twitter, but really it's all about work, doing stuff in Xcode.
So let's move on to Chris and see what your main use case is for these devices. So what would you say you spend most of your time doing on your Mac Mini or even your work machine? I mean, let's consider this as something that could replace machines, you know, tablets replacing machines everywhere. What would you say that the top three things are that you do on your devices, Chris?
He's gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, maybe I'll have a little think about what I do. So I guess I primarily, on my Windows machine, play games. And they're reasonably high-powered games because I want to see them in glorious 1440p. But having a dedicated GPU there is what really makes a difference. As for my MacBook Pro, or I guess at work, when I'm at work, I spend most of my time coding. So I have a Xcode or Visual Studio open and grinding away producing code. But I mean, for most people, I think the primary use case is always still going to be website, email, YouTube, maybe Spotify or an equivalent.
And that's, I think that's something that most people would use. One thing I didn't mention is like music, is that my iMac is used as a media server as well. So I did have a huge iTunes library. It's like 60 gigs of TV shows, movies, music, all that kind of stuff. And that streams around the house when I need it. So the iMac is always on for me and always being used, but it's not really my use case, if you see what I mean. And now that I'm switching over to Plex, because iTunes home sharing is so terrible, it's possible that I could just buy a little standalone NAS drive and stick Plex Media Server on that, and then I wouldn't need the iMac to do that stuff.
Yep. So I'm going to tempt fate one more time and say, so Chris, what are your primary device usage? And do you think you could do any of those things on a tablet that you currently go to your PC to do?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I when I was just running on the Mac Mini, I was using it for a combination of things. I was using it to code primarily websites, to, so slightly different to the development that you guys do. And a bit of gaming, like I would play, like I play Civ 5 on it and I play StarCraft 2 on it and things like that. And it was primarily my work machine. And I, actually, when I got my MacBook Air, oh, look, here he comes again. When I got,
oh,
bear with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his timing is amazing today. He wants some cheese, but you don't know is that I've been giving him lots of cheese. So I think enough. When I got my MacBook, I'll come back to me.
Yes.
Cool. So I think some of the things that have come out of this is that we primarily things that, I mean, again, beyond the web and things that you can definitely already do on a tablet, gaming and coding are two of the things that we do quite a lot. And we'll go to other devices for other than tablets.
Yeah, so with gaming's an interesting one because, I mean, I don't really do much Mac gaming because there isn't much, to be honest. And what there is tends to be older things like Portal 2 or stuff on Steam. And a lot of what is new and coming out is also available on iPad, iPhone, and now potentially Apple TV. And then, of course, you've got your consoles for much bigger games like Fallout 4, for example, I could play on PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One, something like that. So I kind of think that a tablet doesn't necessarily need to do the gaming stuff, but it already kind of does. But the development side of it is where that would be more useful for me. But I've been thinking about this a lot over the last couple of days, because it's rumored that Apple are actually making some kind of Xcode touch that will run on the iPad Pro and let you make apps and games on there. But I'm just not sure how well that would work. Like, I use a 27-inch screen at 5K resolution all the time. And I find that too small sometimes, especially when you're dealing with storyboards where you've got, say you're working on an iPad Pro app, for example, it's going to be huge. And so if you've got a storyboard and then you've got half the screen with code, you've got your debugger, you've got your assets, you've got all kinds of other stuff, there's just not much room to do it all in. And I think trying to do that on a comparatively little iPad Pro screen, I just don't see it working very well myself.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, again, we'll maybe sort of discuss gaming in a minute, but looking at the coding, I think the biggest problem with app development specifically is that you want that space so you can lay out the visuals and the storyboard. Whereas if it was just writing raw code, I think maybe Chris would have a better time if you're doing just web development on a tablet, because you can do that without necessarily having a massive 1440p or 5K screen.
Yeah.
What do you think, Chris? Do you think?
It's interesting to say that, because as I was trying to say before our fourth co-host came in, when I got my MacBook Air, it was when I was working, trying to build up my web development portfolio, and also I was being like full-time dad, so quite a lot of the time we were sort of going out trips and things, and I would take him to the play center, and then I would sit on my MacBook and I would just build websites while he was playing. And it's, you know, the MacBook Air is actually a fantastic machine for building sort of lightweight stuff like, you know, web development. I'm not entirely convinced how well it would run. I mean, it runs Xcode and it runs sort of Java IDEs absolutely fine, but I don't know how it would cope if you were building quite a heavyweight application.
What do you think, though, if you tried to take that web development experience and put it on a tablet? I mean,
yeah,
a bigger tablet than the one you've got, maybe like the 13-inch.
Yeah, well, when I'm doing web stuff, I use an IDE called Coda from Panic Inc.
Awesome IDE.
And they, yes, great. So they have just released. I think they've had it out for a while, but they've just upgraded basically their iPad version. I think they've actually now turned it into a full-fledged IDE. And it was a fairly recent move. I'm trying to think whether it was before the announcement of the iPad Pro or not, so I don't know whether they had that in mind. But I haven't made the move to that because I'm not convinced that my iPad would work for coding websites. And the primary reason for that is because my iPad 3 has become so horribly slow. Because I'm running iOS 9 on it, and it was actually 8 that was really, you know, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. As soon as I upgraded it to 8, it just became a very different tablet, and it was iOS 8 that made me stop using my iPad, really. I think an iPad Pro, I guess you could do web development on it, and that would be fine. And Coda has a built-in, rendering tool, so you don't need to switch between browser and editor. Although anyone who does web development knows that that's kind of not true, because you really need to be able to look at your thing in a variety of different browsers, and a simulator is just a simulator. In the same way that I wouldn't 100% rely on Chrome's developer tools for looking at mobile responsive sites. You know, you have to actually look at it on a phone, because quite often something that Chrome says will look great on an iPhone does look great on an iPhone. You have to look at it on an actual iPhone. I don't know. I'm torn. I mean, I think just the size of the iPad Pro, for that size, I kind of feel like I would rather just use a MacBook, because they are the same size, or virtually the same size.
I guess it boils down to, have you ever, this question for both of you, ever used your iPad with a keyboard?
No, I haven't.
I have, not very often.
Because the problem with the iPad for editing something like in Xcode or in Coda is that half the screen is taken up with the keyboard. So you actually have much less space than you do. Now, that's good. I mean, I've used... I've not used Coda, I don't think. I used... I can't remember the name of it. There was another text editor that had FTP sort of access to it. And I've done that before when I've been out and about and something on a server's broken and I need to change it immediately. Then, oh, great, you can just fire up the iPhone and then just make a very minor edit and do it. And it's fine for little one-off things, but I wouldn't want to be doing a whole website on it. But if you've got something like the iPad or the iPad Pro and you've got an external keyboard, at that point it is becoming more MacBook-like. Especially if you take the iPad Pro, I mean, it is practically the same size as a 13-inch MacBook Air when you've got a keyboard on. But the advantage is that you can take the keyboard off and then you've just got the iPad. And then it really boils down to the software that you have and whether that's any better than having it on a laptop.
And I guess there's still like, I think I'm starting to, like, after this discussion, lean towards what you were saying. Like, I think the iPad could be a useful tool. I think the iPad Pro with a keyboard would be even better for this. It could be great if you're sitting in the library with your kid or something and you just need to do half an hour of edits to a website for a client or something. I think that experience would be pretty good because it's smaller to carry around. You might be carrying it around anyway. You wouldn't have to say, oh, I'm going to bring my iPad in case I want to do this and my MacBook Air in case I need to work. You can just take one device. But I still think, I guess if you're doing web development or iOS development, you still want something where, like, the mouse is still a particularly useful tool for precision. And it's kind of fine to not have one for an hour or two, but if you're doing 8-hour days, having that mouse to, like, browse the web without having to reach across the keyboard to tap the screen or even use a pencil, you know.
That's one of the problems with iOS 9, and it's even more peculiar when you look at the Apple TV. And the reason is that they've improved the keyboard support dramatically with things like you can command tab to go between apps, which is so nice, because that's probably like the first thing you learn to do on a computer is, you know, alt tab to just switch between apps quickly. And you could never do that on the iPad until now. And they've got things like keyboard shortcuts. If you hold down the command key for a second or two, it'll bring up this nice little cheat sheet that says, here's all the keyboard shortcuts for the app you're currently using, which is nice because you can't get that on the Mac. You have to go through all the toolbar and everything to see all the shortcuts. But the problem is that you can't use the arrow keys to navigate around the interface of the apps unless it's been specifically coded in. And because so few people use keyboards with iPads, most developers don't bother doing that. But it's strange because if you look at the Apple TV, they've got this amazing thing called the Focus Engine, which basically, when you lay out your interface, you don't have to worry about it because the remote will automatically know where everything is spatially, so that when you swipe around with the trackpad, it'll go from left to right or up and down as you swipe to the next button without the developer having to code all of that in manually. It just knows how it will appear and takes things like capacity and layout into consideration. But it doesn't do that on the iPad. And to me, it would make more sense if the Focus Engine was in the iPad so that when you press down on the keyboard, it'll automatically go down to the next button. And allegedly, I saw yesterday, actually, a developer had found that the UI engine does exist in iOS 9.1, but it's nowhere near ready. But if that was there, that would suddenly become a lot easier because then you wouldn't need to keep reaching over to touch with your finger to do things. Like, now at least you don't need to reach over to switch apps, which was always the pain. But there is still the pain of navigating through the interface without touching it. And that's what you want to get to, is a point where you can control everything with the keyboard, or practically everything with the keyboard, so that you can just be productive. Because if you have to keep stopping and poking, it's irritating. And it's also painful after a while. If you're working 8 hours, you don't want to be touching the screen all the time, which is why they don't make touchscreen MacBooks or touchscreen iMacs, because holding your hand up is pain.
Yeah, it's a gimmick on a lot of Windows laptops, but I don't think it's useful. So I think what I would be remiss, I know this is going to be met with hisses and boos from maybe the both of you, but it would be bad of us to talk about the hybrid of a PC and a tablet without bringing out the Surface Pro, which is Microsoft's attempt at solving this problem. And I mean, now it's actually very close to the iPad Pro. I mean, it's hardware-wise, it's probably slightly more powerful, but then I think it has fans in. Maybe not the latest one. But size-wise, it's the same. It's got like it's got the sort of keyboard cover and it's got a stylus. So I mean, it's a very similar device in terms of hardware, but the biggest difference is it's running Windows 10. Which obviously get over the badness of that.
Well, I kind of like Windows 10. You know, Windows 10 is fine.
But the interesting thing is the power that brings, because obviously the thing I would miss as well if I was trying to work solely on like an iOS device would be like you can't write a Python script just to do something useful, you know, which are all these things that developers like to do. Whereas with a full Windows machine, you can run DOSBox and you can run Neverwinter Nights if you want to. It runs some quite modern games, but you can also script things up and do everything from the ground up. And I kind of wonder what it would be like to take OS X and install it on a Surface Pro 4. That could be quite a cool experience. But I think that is the closest I've seen to having a one device rules all. I still don't think it serves that purpose quite well enough yet. But it's really cool that you can do all the stuff you can do on your regular Windows PC on a tablet, and you can attach and detach the keyboard and use it like a PC. It's a cool device.
And it's too big a conversation to get into here, but the problem with one device everywhere is nearly always the software, not the hardware. In that the iPad Pro hardware is great, and the Surface Pro is probably just as good, and you've got laptops are fine. But the issue is that if you have something that you want to be a tablet with no keyboard, then the only input really is touch. But when you have a keyboard, you generally want a mouse as well to do more advanced things. And trying to have an interface which works with mouse and finger inputs, merging those two together, they just don't merge very well. And you end up with Windows 8, where you either have massive touch interface where, yes, you can click these with a button with a mouse, but everything's far too big, it doesn't need to be. Or you get into the same Windows 8 situation where they go, okay, well, here's the touch interface and here's the non-touch interface. And I kind of think, how cool would the iPad Pro be like if you could pair a mouse and keyboard with it, and when you did that, it used OS X instead. And it's like, kind of would, but there'd be no consistency between it. Like, let's say I've got Safari open and a text document open. If I then unpair the keyboard and thing, does it go into a completely separate iOS shell where it doesn't remember where I was? Or does it try to go, okay, here's Safari with your tab open, here's Coda with that document in? And then you're dealing with universal apps across Mac and iOS and saving state between them and keeping the features the same. And it's like, even Apple can't keep the features the same between iOS and OS X. There's no chance that developers are going to do all of that work to try and make that happen.
Yeah.
And it would just end up being a crappy experience.
I think it's admirable that Microsoft are trying. With Windows 10, they're getting closer to a reasonable solution. But the Surface Pro does feel more like a PC that you can sometimes run as a tablet rather than a tablet that is like, rather than something in the middle. It's like, yeah, it's a PC. If I run Excel, even in touch mode, it's still going to be lots of tiny buttons and not overly usable. But I guess they fill different, slightly different niches, and I think the Surface is the closest to being in the middle, because you can use it as a tablet, but it's not anywhere near the iOS tablet experience.
I mean, is it time, with the iPad Pro, which, I mean, certainly the stats make it look really impressive next to a MacBook. So is it time for OS X to make it across to the iPad Pro?
I wouldn't have thought so, because to do that you would need to have a mouse, because OS X is just not designed for touch input. I mean, everything is too small. It just wouldn't work in terms of touch areas and that kind of stuff. So you'd need to have a mouse. And then at that point, you're just using it on a desktop, and it's like, well, why not just have a desktop or a laptop? I mean, yes, you could have one device, but looking at it logically, Apple doesn't want you to have one device, because they want you to buy two devices, because that's how they make their money. They don't make it on software. They make it on selling the hardware. That's why they can write off huge things like Apple Music or iCloud, which, you know, are huge costs to them, but they're just small footnotes because that's the kind of thing that gets people to buy the hardware and locks you into the ecosystem and upgrade. So I don't think they have any interest in making one device that rules all. I mean, they showed that graphic when the Apple Watch was announced, which was kind of like the evolution of man, although it's backwards. Because you, at the bottom is the Apple Watch, and then an iPhone, and then an iPad, and then a MacBook, and then an iMac. And they don't necessarily want you to own all of them, although they'd be happy if you did, but they want you to own at least probably two of those things.
Yeah.
This is just a range of products that you can own. I don't think they'll ever get to a point where you can do all of that stuff in one device. And nor should it. Most people can get by. I mean, I'm coming rapidly to a conclusion here. We're all developers, so it's a bit trickier. But for most people, I think you could get rid of a MacBook and use an iPad in its place. I mean, it's probably easier, like with your wives, do they use laptops? And if they do they need to? Could they do everything they do on a laptop and an iPad?
Well, yeah, I mean, my wife has an iPad mini, which she loves. And then I've got my MacBook Air, which I think she loves a bit more. She had at the point when she figured out how to use OS X, she has made the transition to using my MacBook more than her iPad.
Interesting.
And my wife does some Python and data analysis using R and MATLAB and things. So there's nothing to substitute that on an iPad yet. So unfortunately, there's another case which is too technical. But again, not representative of the general population.
I was going to say, and that's probably the most showy thing you've said. Like, you could have been the point where you're like, check out my graphics card that's got 1440p, look at all my devices, but no, my wife uses Python and MATLAB.
But cool, I think this is a good time, though, to wrap it up, so maybe if we can just go around and say our final thoughts on this topic. So, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the iPad will ever replace the laptop, because I like to take my MacBook out and about to work on. And if I'm going on a train or something, I will take my iPad and probably play a game on it or read like a digital comic. But I won't ever take my iPad and think, great, I'm going to build a website on my iPad. I will just take my MacBook for that, because it's so light and powerful, you know?
I think my feeling is that for most people, I think over the next couple of years, they will transition to just having tablets. And that most people will go to a job somewhere, and they might do work on a computer. But in the evenings, most people don't have computers. I mean, we're very much not the right people for this discussion, because we've probably had computers for years and years and years and years, and we like building them and playing with them and doing all kinds of stuff with a proper computer. But most people I know who are not tech workers either don't have a computer at home, or if they do, it's like an old PC in a corner which they occasionally use for whatever. And for most people, I think that they could get by with just a tablet. Most people do everything that they want to on an iPhone anyway, especially like the younger generation. Like your son, Chris, I mean, he'll be, you know, he's already using an iPad.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, in like 5-6 years, do you think he'll have a laptop, or do you think he'll just keep using an iPad and he'll just be used to touch interfaces? And like the concept of having a large computer fixed to a desk would be completely alien.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, when he gets older, he's going to need to, I don't know. That's a really good question, because even the iPad technology is going so fast. I'd always assumed that when he was a bit older, we would probably have like an iMac in the living room that he could do his homework on and such. But you're right, he could probably be able to do everything on the iPad by that point.
And that's what I think will happen for most for most people, that they'll be able to do an iPad. Like for people like us that are making, you know, software, essentially, that's a lot harder. especially because you need to test on so many devices. But I think for most people, they'd be fine with just an iPad.
Yeah. It's a really, really interesting point. I mean, I think I'm still slightly in the camp that people who want to be productive at home are probably still going to want a PC. So even if you're just some, even if you're, I think just, you know, if you're a business person and you like to write documents at home and things, I think not just emails, but actual reports and documents, and having a real station with a keyboard is probably like a good for your mindset to go over and sit at the computer and work. And I guess maybe we just don't need one device. I think that's what this discussion has made me think. Like, it's kind of cool that there are devices out there that can proxy as the other. So you can get a Surface Pro or an iPad Pro, and it can do some of the stuff a PC can do, and the Surface Pro can do some of the stuff a tablet can do. But maybe that's where we should, yeah, we should be happy with that. It's like, that's cool. If I leave my tablet at home, I've got something that can place it for a day. If I need to do a little bit of work in the park or something, I can just quickly get my iPad out and do some. But, you know, the iPad is a great device for, like, reading and consuming and watching and reading. The PC with the keyboard and the mouse is a great device for producing and writing and putting things in. And maybe that's how it should go. And the fact that PCs now are advancing quite slowly, I mean, really slowly compared to how they used to. A five-year-old PC nowadays is still fine for 90% of people who just want to write Word documents and do basic work on it. And I guess most people can probably, therefore, afford both the PC and an iPad now, whereas 5 years ago they couldn't. So I think that's what I think at the end of it all. Maybe there's still a place for both devices. Some people won't need both if you just want to read the web, you know, read some comics, read a website at home and do some email. You probably don't need a home PC anymore for that. But I think people who actually want to be productive in any reasonable sense outside of work, there's always a space for the PC, but they're so cheap now. You can get laptops for £300. You know, there's no reason not to have both. So, cool. But I think that wraps it up nicely. So,
interesting discussion, actually.
Cool. So you've been carefully listening to an awesome podcast called The Divide.
Yeah.
And you can check out our website at www.thedivide.co.uk, where you can check out our last episode, and maybe if you're listening to this sometime in the future, some of our future episodes, where I'm sure we'll get even more professional and hardcore. So we'll be recording the next show in 2 weeks' time, and hopefully they'll start to appear on the website at some point soon. So thank you ever so much for listening. Once again, you've been listening to The Divide. I've been John, and joining me today, Ben and Chris.